Hello and welcome to this week's Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fospero. Today I'd like to share with you an extraordinary story of courage, bravery and hope in the face of heartbreaking tragedy. Horatio's Garden creates and maintains beautiful gardens at NHS spinal injury centres, spaces which are designed to help with the mental and physical rehabilitation of people coming to terms with life-changing injuries.
The garden, it's somewhere to sit and relax. Somewhere to clear your mind or have a cry.
There's something else to look out instead of inside the ward, because it's like just grey walls. So to get out in a garden is very nice.
The charity is named after Horatio Chappell, a schoolboy who wanted to be a doctor and who volunteered at the Duke of Cornwall Spinal Treatment Centre in Salisbury in his school holidays. In 2011, Horatio's life was cut short when he was just 17. He was on a summer expedition to Svalbard and his camp was attacked by a polar bear. But his legacy lives on, and today I'm joined by his mum, Dr. Olivia Chappell. Olivia, Horatio sounds an incredible young man. Can we start off with you telling us a little bit about him?
Yes, thank you, Helen. He really was. He was a young man who was always wise beyond his years. He had a real sort of joy of life, but also an appreciation of the outside and the benefits of being in nature. It was at his favourite place was lying in the garden with a good book. But he also had a great sense of humour and a great drive. He really had a sense of where he wanted to go with his life and what he wanted to do.
Your husband, David, is a spinal injury surgeon. How did David's work inspire Horatio, do you think?
Horatio looked up to David enormously, as we all do in the family. And he inspired him throughout his life, not only with the ideas of being a doctor and possibly a surgeon, but just David's kindness, generosity, and his enjoyment of life that infused Horatio. And he was very similar in many ways to his father.
And he volunteered, didn't he, at the Duke of Cornwall Spinal Treatment Centre in his holidays. I mean, what sort of work was he doing there?
So he volunteered to help with the patients. So it was very much helping with making cups of tea, reading to patients, generally chatting, trying to be as useful as you can when you're a 16-year-old boy in a hospital environment. One of the patients I spoke to afterwards said he wasn't very good at making tea, but she soon put him straight. He was quite good by the end of his summer there. Sometimes patients asked him to take them outside. So he had a first-hand experience of what being outside meant when you were in a spinal injury centre for a long time. And that had quite a profound impact on him.
What sort of things did he used to come home and say to you and David about taking patients outside, and what sort of things really struck him?
He was really struck that there was nowhere that was beautiful to go. That it was just going outside into the car park, and that were all the normal things that you'd see in a hospital environment, the big no smoking signs, the bins, the cars pulling up, a busy clinical environment. But it wasn't somewhere that he felt that you could be to relax, to just get away from the noise of the ward, to sort of pull yourself into a good mental space when you're in hospital for so long. The impact of spinal injury is enormous, not only for that patient, but their friends and family. And Horatio felt that so deeply. And he really articulated it beautifully, actually, in his, his personal statement for university. And he wrote about what a dramatic effect this was and how talking to patients had moved him so much. He really felt very deeply about it and wanted to make things better for these people.
And you encouraged him to do some research, didn't you? Didn't he do a questionnaire?
That's right, yes. So he came home and he'd bring this idea home about, why can't there be a garden? And it really worried him, and he talked about it over supper and things. And David and I were probably a bit dismissing to start with, because we said, you don't know how difficult it is to do things in the NHS. Building a garden in the middle of a hospital is a really huge undertaking, and don't take this lightly. But he kept going, and we talked it through, and then really sort of encouraged him to see whether to validate his thoughts, to do a questionnaire to find out whether the patients, number one, thought that that was also a good idea, or whether hospital staff as well. So that's what he did. And he designed a questionnaire, and he went round and talked to everybody and found overwhelmingly that everybody thought that it would be a really good idea. And the patients wanted somewhere that was completely beautiful, that would, you know, transport them from all the here and now and the practical clinical environment, but that would also be truly accessible and safe for them. And bear in mind, these are people who are newly in wheelchairs and are really just learning how to get around independently, but somewhere that didn't speak to them of accessibility. So it wasn't all about, you know, disabled signs and raised beds and special equipment. It was somewhere that they could enjoy just as their friends and family would enjoy, and actually sort of get away from the fact that they were in hospital.
They're such mature, grown-up thoughts for one so young, and really sensitive thoughts. I mean, he really did get in the hearts and minds of these patients, didn't he?
He really did. One of his friends described him as a doctor in waiting. Oh. And I really think he was, you know, he just had this very wise and kind head on him. And he loved nothing more than to problem solve and find solutions to things. And I think in this idea, you know, he found a solution and started to put together really a back of an envelope idea of how we could do something. And he'd started various fundraising ideas, and we had some plans, you know, over that summer of how we were going to raise the money that we needed to do it before the tragedy struck.
Olivia, I know it's difficult for you to explain, I'm sure, even all these years on, but Horatio went off on what was presumably going to be the trip of a lifetime. Are you able to share a little bit with us of what happened?
Yes, so he went with a group of young people to Svalbard in the Arctic Circle, and the idea was that it was a science trip, and they were going to be not only, you know, having an amazing time in this extraordinary environment, but learning about science and learning, you know, about what it's like to live in and camp in that sort of environment. Of course, we knew there were risks associated with that, but, you know, we hadn't really understood the extent of those risks and that they weren't managed risks. And about 10 days into the trip, they were sleeping in small camps and tents, and a polar bear managed to get into the tent area. And Horatio got up, got out of his tent and tried to challenge the bear. And in that time, he managed to get by time for his friends to get away, and most of the others managed to escape. The young people managed to escape. Two were harmed, and then two of the leaders were severely injured as well in what ensued. But Horatio lost his life in that. Yeah, so that day on the 5th of August, you know, our lives changed and Horatio lost his life. And what has happened since then has been a way for us to not only do the work that he'd set out to do, albeit in some very different way to how he would have been if he'd become a doctor and had the life that he'd hoped to live. It has enabled us to create a legacy for him, and something that has real energy and drive, which connects us with him and with his ideas, and every day improves lives for people, which is fantastic, but it is born out of the most enormous loss.
It's difficult, I think, as a parent to understand how, in those early days, how you managed to get through the day. And did very early on the outpouring of support and love from friends and family spawn this idea that actually let's do something in Horatio's name? Did that help you cope and get through to the other side of each day?
I think it did, because there was something to hold on to when everything else had just turned itself upside down. You know, you're hit with a tsunami of grief and thoughts that I never could imagine that I could have had before, the depths of terribleness. But there was just this little thread of something that we could do. And importantly, I think in the early stages, something that our friends and family, because it's incredibly, incredibly hard to support someone who's gone through that sort of experience. And I think it gave our friends a focus as well, which was fantastic. And then as we started to get a little bit stronger, it has definitely given me a focus, well, all of us a focus, to be able to do something for Horatio and in his name, and something that is really making a difference to people.
And your first garden was in Salisbury, where he volunteered and where he did all his research. Tell us a bit about that garden. I gather Clive West was the designer, but tell us about that process and how it came about, because it is indeed a massive project, isn't it, to try and get some space at an NHS hospital and realise that dream.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were very fortunate in that my husband's a consultant there and knew the team, and the team was so supportive because they knew Horatio. And in fact, he'd even tried to, he had gone and got the chairman of the NHS Trust and brought him to the site and said, you know, this should really be a garden, you know. And so, you know, everybody knew it had been a really hot topic before Horatio had gone away. And they could all see as well that it would make such a big difference to patients. But you're right, the actual process of doing it is enormously difficult. And we did a consultation with all sorts of different people. I didn't decide how we were going to do this. And I called Clive West, incredible garden designer, and he'd done some therapeutic gardens. He'd done one for Bupa before. So he had a track record of doing things, gardens in care environment. But actually what I hadn't known when I called him was that his best friend taught him all about gardening, had had a spinal injury and had been in Salisbury spinal unit about 10 years before. And so Clive spent a lot of time visiting him. He'd even spent nights on a camp bed in the floor in the spinal unit. And so he knew immediately what we were talking about and understood what a difference this could make. And his ideas really informed, you know, he listened to our brief and he talked to everybody, you know, from the management to the patients to their relatives and domestic staff, as well as the nursing staff and therapists. But he also brought his own experience in there. And he really said, you know, we want to make this an incredible garden, something that's all year round beautiful. So there's always some hope and there's always something emerging, you know, even on a grim old February day, there's going to be something that's hopeful when you go around in your wheelchair or your hospital bed. And so Clive brought these threads of ideas which were based on his experience, but then with his horticultural and design expertise to create a really, you know, beautiful place. And we opened the garden thanks to the phenomenal generosity of, to start with, it was friends and family. And then it started to ripple out as people had heard, you know, the story was in the press and people heard about Horatio and they were moved by his story. And very generously donated to the project so that we were able to, within a year or just over a year after Horatio died, we opened the first garden.
That must have been amazing. How did you feel that day, Olivia? I'm sure it was very emotional for lots of reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Very emotional. I mean, it's been very emotional for the last 10 years. It really has. It's one of the garden designers, James Alexander Sinclair, always says, you know, we laugh a lot, but we cry a lot too. We do, because this is a very emotional project, not only because of Horatio's story, but every patient who's in the spinal injury centre has the most extraordinary story, life-changing event that has happened to them. And it's a very sort of emotionally charged environment. And, you know, there is a lot of sadness, but there's also this extraordinary thing that human nature has of a lot of laughs and smiles as well, because people find you find a common ground and those emotions can swing between each other and mean as much as, you know, the sadness is balanced by the laughter, and they're both as important as each other. And so I think there was, on that day we opened, there was a huge amount of joy and hope. But of course, for me as Horatio's mother, you know, that the person I wanted to be there, he wasn't physically there, but I'm sure that he was with us somehow.
Oh, and I'm sure he must be so proud of that garden and the other ones you've gone on. He would have loved what you're doing, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he really would. He really would have a real sense of something really good was happening here.
We featured a great friend of mine on the podcast series, Claire Lomas, who I know that you're very much aware of. Claire was paralysed when she had a riding accident and has gone on to raise more than £750,000 for spinal injury and do incredible things like walk the London Marathon in a bionic suit over 17 days, which, and then not be entitled to a medal, which is how she first made the headlines. She's an incredible lady, but I remember talking to her about her early days in a hospital in the north, and there was was no outdoor space. And of course, when somebody has a spinal injury, often they're in hospital for months. And she had very dark thoughts and felt very low and depressed. I just wonder if you can tell us, in your words, the benefits that you can see for spinal injury patients and their friends and families who also have to come to terms with their loved ones' life-changing injuries, what benefits you can see that they get out of those beautiful spaces and reconnecting with nature and having somewhere to really think and be peaceful and calm.
Absolutely, because, you know, spinal injury is a physical injury, but it's also a psychological battle. And we know that people who have had spinal cord injury are at risk of mental illness, particularly depression, you know, in the long term as well. But we also know that if there can be an adjustment time and people and their friends and family can adjust to what has happened in the initial phase, in the, and I say acute phase, but you know, this is patients can be in hospital for 6 months or more, as it's a really intensely important time when people are physically unwell. But also they've just got so much to process. And we know that if they can process that in a positive way and get to the point where they have adjusted before they go home, that they will, in the long term, have a less likelihood of experience depressive illness. Now, gardens and gardening are phenomenally good at improving mental health. It's quite astounding what they do on all sorts of different levels. So just being in touch with nature can lift your mood immediately. It can reduce your blood pressure. It can enhance serotonin, make you sleep better. It can boost mood in all sorts of different ways to do with cortisol and things, as well as being interesting and hopeful and adding sort of new layers of things to concentrate on and look at distraction, really. So a garden, just being outside and outside from a physical ward with the daylight, with the sound of the birds singing, I'm looking at the sky, all those things enhance mood immediately, which is so fundamentally important to this group of people, as well as it being a place where rehabilitation can happen. So you can learn your wheelchair skills in the garden. You know, how much more interesting to be able to tour around and through the flower beds and see the butterflies and explore the garden than doing it all inside in a gym. But you can also participate in our projects in garden therapy. So you can, you know, get using your fine motor control of your hands. You can get that going with planting bulbs or doing some troweling or cutting flowers. So gardening lends itself to all sorts of different types of rehabilitation, as well as being a beautiful sort of social area. So you have to remember that when you're in hospital for that long, it becomes so important, particularly if you're a young person, to have your friends and family continuing to come in and visit you. And for a lot of young people, that can be quite hard. If you're a teenage boy coming in to visit your friend and, you know, you might be in a sharing a bedroom with seven other people, just a curtain for privacy. It's not an environment which is a very alien environment for a lot of young people. And to keep visiting can be quite difficult. But what we found is that if someone can say, well, I'll meet you in the garden, and then their friends don't even have to come into the hospital and they can see them in the garden, and it's a much more relaxed environment. All our gardens have garden rooms, so their friends, they can host them, they can make them a cup of tea or cold drink. And suddenly the dynamic of the visit and the sort of stress that can be associated with those, you know, round the bedside visits with a, you know, packet of grapes, it all just sort of calms a bit and people enjoy themselves. It's like being alongside somebody. So people say if you go for a walk in nature, you know, it's a much more gentle environment to have a conversation in because you're not having the eye-to-eye contact, and difficult discussions are much easier outside. And that's evidence-based as well. And there are lots of, you know, difficult conversations as well as social conversations because people may not be able to go back to their homes or be able to return to their workplace. And so there's lots of things, you know, people have got to think through and work through with their families. And we find that, you know, people find a niche in the garden or they use one of our little garden pods or the greenhouse or somewhere to have these conversations or to have family moments. So, you know, we've had people who've had birthday parties in the greenhouse or coached their kids through their A-levels. We had somebody who got their granddaughter baptised in the greenhouse.
We heard from Jess and Aaron in the introduction, Olivia, both of whom have benefited enormously from your work and Horatio's plans. Let's just have a listen to a little bit of their stories.
I had an accident at the end of May that left me paralysed. So I fell from a tree, 15 foot.
going down the hill about 40 mile an hour. I couldn't stop in time. Bike hit me in the back, and I knew straight away, unfortunately, my legs weren't working.
So it's like a hospital. You got the long corridors, doom and gloom, really. When you come out here, it's lovely. The fresh air, the flowers, the little huts. It's really good for your mind.
You must hear so many stories from patients like that, Olivia. That's really rewarding, I'm guessing.
It's so rewarding, and it never ceases to move me. On one level, it's such a simple idea, really. And it's something that, you know, hospitals all through the ages used to be connected with gardens and with the outside. And it was so sort of recognised and part of well-being and healthcare. And then through the modern NHS and the advent of, you know, much shorter lengths of stays, gardens were gradually eroded from our healthcare environment. But for this group of patients who are there for such a long time, facing really difficult life-changing injuries, becoming paralysed, it can make the most enormous difference. And it's so gratifying and such a privilege as well to hear those stories and for people to be able to, you know, articulate what a difference plants can make to their lives.
One of the things I liked that you said was that in the design, which I'd like to talk about a little bit more, of the gardens, that they're not obviously designed for wheelchair use. It's all very subtle. And I think that's really important. Again, something that Claire said to me that was said to her in the hospital. They said, don't worry, you can still learn to ski on a special chair and you can make some new disabled friends. And she said, I will learn to ski and I will ski with my friends. It's very important, in particularly in those early stages of an injury like this, isn't it, that people feel normal and they don't feel disabled? Is that a very important part of the design?
It is really important. And it's, you know, a lot of patients say to us that they want to be able to access somewhere independently as well. It's so important. And it's so difficult. You wouldn't believe how inaccessible a lot of hospitals are. You know, little curbs, little thresholds, a bit of a camber on the pavement or the path means that it can be inaccessible. I mean, anything over about a centimetre for somebody who's newly in a wheelchair means that it's just a complete no-go. So all of our gardens are completely level. We have no thresholds at all. The doors open automatically, the lights come on, and people can, you know, who are paralyzed with no hand function can be able to enjoy the garden as they would have done before they'd had their injury.
One of the designers you've used is Tom Stuart Smith, who, I'm not a big gardener, Olivia, but I have heard of him. I know he won about 8 or 9 gold medals and 3 best in show at Chelsea. We've just got a few words from him about what the gardens mean.
The sort of potential that a garden has, the sense of a future and that things are going to get better and that things are going to grow and flower, and then is something so valuable if you're a patient without much of a sense of a future.
What was Tom like to work with?
Tom's a genius. It was wonderful to work with him, not only for his, you know, expertise and his outstanding design ideas, but also that Sue, his wife, who's a consultant psychiatrist, has been writing a book and was writing it during the time we were designing the garden, called The Well Garden Mind. It's the most phenomenal book, which has been translated now into, I think, 10 different languages. And it really talks about the impacts of gardens and gardening, particularly on psychology and psychiatric illness, but on general well-being. So through Sue's extensive research for the book, Tom is obviously even more tuned in than he would have been previously to the real benefits that this group of patients was going to have from the garden that he was creating.
The wonderful Joanna Lumley is an ambassador for you. How does she support you, Olivia?
Oh, she's a joy, Joanna. She has done so much for us and we're so grateful to her. And we hope that she's going to be heading up our carol service this Christmas. But she's also done a wonderful campaign for us. We have an annual sort of summer fabulous tea party and Joanna has headed it up for us. We had a fantastic photo shoot with her. And it's all, the fabulous tea party is all about about people holding a tea party in their garden or on their roof terrace or in their office or anywhere, you know, tea for one, tea for two, or tea for 100, and get your friends around in the days when we can do that, which hopefully is soon. It's a lovely way to gently get together and raise a little bit of money for the charity.
And another national treasure, Mary Berry, opened your third garden at Stoke Mandeville. I mean, gosh, another fabulous name, and she's adorable, isn't she?
She is, and she brought a ray of magic to that day when she opened the garden. It was wonderful to see so many patients' faces light up to see her, old and young. It was just wonderful. And Mary has a national treasure, but she's also a treasure particularly to us because she's the president of the National Garden Scheme. And the National Garden Scheme is the brilliant organisation that open their gardens for charities. And we are one of the charities who benefit from the grants that they give as a result of people visiting gardens. So
I remember a very stressful moment in my career when I was hosting on the GMTV sofa and Mary Berry was coming in as a guest the next day. So some bright spark in our production team decided it would be a great idea for me to bake a cake the night before and have Mary try it live on air. She was very kind about it, but I'd only got a minute left on the programme and I could hear the timings going. They're like, speed her up, get her to taste it, get her to taste it. So here I am sitting with this sort of wonderful character trying to force her to eat a bit quickly because we were about to fall off air. But a Royal Highness Princess Eugénie is also your first royal patron, and I suppose Eugénie's gone under spinal surgery herself, so it must be wonderful to have her on board, and I would imagine she's got a very big understanding of what you're doing, having had that personal experience herself.
Yes, she really has. So she had her scoliosis surgery at the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital, where we've just opened the garden that Tom Stuart Smith designed. And Her Royal Highness has been to visit our projects in Stoke Mandeville and in Glasgow. And she's absolutely brilliant at talking to the patients. She has a really deep empathy, a real understanding, having had this personal experience of having really major spinal surgery. So she's been such a wonderful role model for many young people as well who've had scoliosis, but also our younger patients too. And you know, she's not only come and visited, but got involved planting in the gardens. And so we're just, you know, we're incredibly proud to have her as our royal patron, and all of her involvement with the charity is, we're just delighted.
And I know you met the Queen, Olivia, I think it was 2019, at the centenary of the National Council of Voluntary Organisations. Do you think Her Majesty's aware of the work you do, perhaps through Eugénie, or did you get the chance to talk to her at all at that event?
I did have the enormous privilege of speaking to Her Majesty, and I was so delighted because she is very much aware of our work and was very much aware of Horatio and the ideas that he'd had. So it was an incredibly moving time.
Well, that must have been an amazing experience for you. How many gardens do you have now, and what's the vision for the future?
So at the moment, we have 5 gardens that are open, and we're building the 6th one, which is in Cardiff, which will serve the whole of Wales. And our plan is to build gardens, Horatio's gardens, in all the UK's 11 spinal injury centres. So we're just launching a capital appeal for Northern Ireland for the spinal unit in Belfast, which is very exciting. And then we'll be, over the next few years, building the centres in the remaining centres, which are in Sheffield, in Middlesbrough, Wakefield and Southport. And then once we've opened the gardens, it really is just the start. So we run them as fantastic projects where all sorts of things can happen. I've mentioned garden therapy, but we also have arts events, we do live music, we have sort of food events, and anything that we can find of interest to patients, we will do it. And we're just starting a new sort of arts campaign where we'll be bringing in all sorts of different artists in residence and storytellers, poets to the gardens to really, you know, bring that other dimension to people who, you know, really in hospital for a long time, and you know, having different things to mean that you, particularly from the arts, it's such a wonderful thing, and the testimony and sort of impact that these type of activities have on our patients is really overwhelming.
And presumably the fundraising continues, because I would imagine the gardens cost a lot of money, do they, to put together?
Yes, absolutely. So once we open the gardens, we employ a head gardener, and we have a team of fantastic volunteers. We couldn't do it without them. They come and help with the planting and tending the flower beds, but also, you know, bring their skills. So we might have people who are artists or people who love crafts who can bring their expertise to help with some of the activities that we run. But it does all cost money. So we do continue to raise funds in the region where that spinal injury centre supports. And, you know, these are really big regions. So because there's only 11 centres in the UK. So, for example, the garden in Salisbury serves the whole of the southwest right down to the Scilly Isles. So they're big areas, and we hope that we gain support from that whole area ongoing for the running costs. But we're always looking for people to help us with that and to get involved in so many different ways. There's a momentum and an energy to the charity with lots of young people involved, and the fundraising is fun. The events we have are fun when we're allowed to have them. We hope that, you know, people can really see it's been built on the effect of having a lot of people working together, and it really shows, you know, the power of the small donation, the collective difference that we can all make to people.
And what an extraordinary legacy for Horatio.
It really is. And he'd be so, you know, he'd be so delighted just to see what change this has brought about, to see how his friends are really, you know, getting involved, what his brothers do, and what an impact it's having on people who are facing really difficult times.
Olivia, we wish you well with creating more beautiful spaces and maintaining them and bringing all this wonderful stuff to the table for people who are going through extraordinary, painful and difficult times. Do share our chat with Claire Lomas, with your teams. And if there's anything I can do, I'm quite happy to roll my sleeves up and come and do a bit of volunteering, and definitely coming to your carol service this Christmas, which is not very far away from where I live. So we'll meet in person then. But it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for sharing what is such an inspirational story out of such sadness with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it's been really lovely to chat with you, and I really look forward to being able to see you when we're allowed to get out and about and see people normally again.
I know, that would be a great pleasure. I'm looking forward to that too. We started the podcast with Jess, who was paralysed after falling from a tree. So let's give her the final word.
It's super important because it impacts on how you then do your rehabilitation. If you're in a good mood, good air, then you'll do good in your sessions. So it's important, really important.
You've been listening to Dr. Olivia Chapel, whose son Horatio was killed in a tragic accident, but whose legacy lives on and helps people cope with life-changing injuries every day in special places in NHS centres across Britain. If you'd like to learn more about the extraordinary work of Horatio's Garden, donate, or perhaps get involved, then please go to their website, horatiosgarden.org.uk. Thank you so much for listening today. You can download and subscribe to our podcast series at convex.podbean.com, or search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, or ask Alexa. I'll be back next week with another inspirational story. So bye for now.